Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. As always, we appreciate you so much being here, and don't forget to like, subscribe, all the good stuff. And reminder for people who enjoy listening on the audio only platforms, we are everywhere you get your podcasts. So feel free to check us out over there. Today, I have a guest that I'm so excited to talk to. I'm sure you guys are already following her, you know, watching her videos, liking her tweets, because she is absolutely blown up on the scene since she started making content. Please welcome Amala Epinobi. She's someone I've been following for a long time, so really excited to have her on the channel. Hey, how are you doing? Thank you so much for being here.
I'm doing well. It's good to be here. As you know, I'm a longtime follower of you as well, so I'm so glad we're able to have this conversation today.
That's so cool to hear. And, you know, we were just talking a little bit. You're only 23. You've accomplished so much. That's absolutely crazy. There are so many stories that I want to talk to you about. But sure. For people who maybe aren't familiar with like your lore, your origin story, how did you get started with all this like content creation that you're doing now?
Yeah, so I started doing this a few years back, and it all started on TikTok. I'll go and tell a very short version of what's a really long story. I grew up in a really left-leaning household and was a left activist for quite some time, all throughout middle school, high school. When I graduated high school, I thought instead of going into higher education, I'm just going to dedicate my time to essentially woke activism. And I did that for about a year or so before realizing it wasn't the ideology for me, and sort of stepped away from politics, stepped away from cultural conversations, and realized that maybe I had more conservative beliefs than I would have previously considered, and jumped on TikTok to sort of tell that story, explain that transitional period in my life. And that led to the content creation that I do now.
So did you have one moment where you were thinking, wow, maybe actually I'm not as left-wing as I thought I was, or hey, maybe stuff that's more conservative is actually making sense? Like, did you have a, for lack of a better term, specific come to Jesus moment, or was it just a realization that kind of happened gradually? Because I'm someone who, I mean, I was in College Republicans when I was 17 years old. I was interning like for Republicans when I was 19. I've had changes of opinion, and I'm definitely not the same person I was back then, but I've always kind of been conservative or right-leaning. I've gone through more libertarian, more neocon phases, but I just, it's so interesting to me when I talk to people like you, or last week we had Carrie Smith, who've had these like bigger changes. I'm always so curious to know how that happens, because there are a lot of people who will say, oh, there's no point talking to the left. I can sometimes get into that black pill mentality as well, where like, oh no, lost cause, just abandon all hope. But that's why it's so great having people like you who are talking about this, because it actually goes to show like, hang on, we can still have a conversation. People's minds can still be changed.
Yeah, 100%. I say really don't give up. I'm pretty optimistic when it comes to these things because of how radical I used to be. And as far as whether or not there was a light bulb moment, no, it was very much a gradual process. And I hung on to my ideology for dear life. I did not want to leave the left at the time because I had staked so much of my identity within the ideology and within the agenda. But what really led to me waking up was really my background and my race. I am biracial, half white, half black. And I started to recognize and realize that there was a lot of racism and intolerance amongst people on the left, specifically towards white people. And I was going into a job every single day that sort of emphasized this fact for me, and then returning home to a white family who had always taken care of me. So there was just this moment of cognitive dissonance where I couldn't really hold the two beliefs, the love for my family and the ideology, in my head at the same time. And I kept coming to this same barrier or hurdle every single day when I went into work. And eventually it sort of snowballed into recognizing that there were other chinks in the armor when it came to some of the ideas that I was expressing and teaching other people. And I guess eventually it just became this unavoidable wall that I had to look at and break through in order to get to the other side.
Right. And so, I mean, we've had people talk about being kind of excommunicated from friends if they've gone through these big transformations, leaving the left. Is that something you've experienced? Because I mean, I know I've never been on the left, but even just being more vocal about my own opinions, I've kind of lost contact with friends who like I grew up with. And it's always something that's really painful. And if you're someone who was maybe actually an activist before, I would imagine that maybe politics were an even bigger part of your friendships. Because on my end, these are people who like we were never really politically active or anything like that. But, you know, it came to a point when I guess my videos were popular enough, enough of my content was out there that was deemed controversial, where like it did become a problem for friendships, which was, you know, obviously that's like an unpleasant thing to happen.
Yeah, 100%. I feel for you on that because I did go through a very similar experience in when I was younger. I sort of had a friend group that had a good split on it. I had some moderate conservatives on one side and then some very radical leftists on the other. And I started making these videos on TikTok that were sort of going viral, and I would share them on my personal social media so that, you know, people could keep up with what I was posting. And slowly but surely, the two left-leaning friends just fizzled out. And it wasn't even a confrontational moment where they came and said, you know what? Because of what you're saying, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. I just got friend ghosted by these two people. Yeah. And you know what? Surprisingly, not even surprisingly at this point with where we are now, my two conservative friends were the ones who stuck around through everything and the whole transition and loved me when I was on the left and, you know, loved me when now where I'm at now, whatever we want to call the space we're in now. And that was really surprising at the time. But now that I'm sort of separated from it, you just realize that if they couldn't accept you for your beliefs and your thoughts and opinions, then they probably weren't great friends to begin with.
Yeah. And that's always hard. How about like on the family side without, you know, you don't need to get too personal, but have, I guess, your politics been any controversial take, like when you're at the Thanksgiving dinner table or anything like that? Because I'm from a background where like my family's pretty apolitical. I think like, you know, my dad has opinions I don't agree with, but it's like overall, we've never been a family to put politics, you know, at the forefront. So is it different from you because you or for you because you describe coming from like an activist background from your family even?
Yeah, it was difficult at the time that it was happening. People who know me know that my mom works for the political left. So that's been her entire background and what she's given her career towards is activism and, you know, development. So we had a turbulent time, is what I'll call it, when I sort of came out as conservative, and we would go back and forth on all these different issues and just catfight over things. And it just became this escalated, inflammatory relationship for, I would say, a period of about a few months. And at some point, I think we just recognized that the mother-daughter relationship and our familial relationship transcends the arguments that we're going to have about politics. And we got over it. It took a period of adjustment in order to do that, but we made it to the other end, and now we're doing better than ever.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. Family is so important. And I feel like as important as politics are, ultimately, we're speaking out for our values because we care about our families. So, yeah. I love to hear that. I'm so happy when people can put aside differences, which shouldn't be like that big of a deal. But I mean, in this climate, honestly, it can be for some people. So that's great to hear. Speaking of like womanhood, motherhood, sisterhood. Mm-hmm. I do want to get your take on Dylan Mulvaney's latest exploits. And I have to be, okay, so I'm going to be careful because YouTube is striking people down for like misgendering. Have you had any issues with that on your channel? Because I know this is a Blaze show. I got their channel suspended for an entire week because of something I said about Elliot Page. Have you had any problems with that? Because you cover like all of these hot button issues.
Yeah, not on YouTube, but on every other platform I've had issues. For me, TikTok has been the most sensitive when it comes to talking about gender, although that seems to be changing more recently. But YouTube, I've been okay, I think.
Okay, so well, hopefully we'll keep up that streak. But I find TikTok, if people watching this aren't on TikTok, they are far and away more sensitive than YouTube or Facebook. I got a video taken down for harassment and bullying because it was this short that's posted on my YouTube channel too of this woman who was wearing like a sheep hat. Like she was like dressed kind of like a pseudo furry. And basically all I said was, you clearly want attention. Like most mild criticism I could possibly muster, and that got taken down. It's like, wow, very sensitive.
People go through and mass report. It's like, it's insane. It's an insane environment. Yeah.
No, it's crazy. I did manage to get it like appealed, but still the fact that it was even taken down is crazy. So we're going to be talking about Dylan, but first I do want to say a big thank you to today's sponsor, Beam. If you are watching this, know that sleep is extremely important. A bad night's sleep doesn't just make you feel tired the next day. It can actually affect your mood, your productivity, and your ability to think clearly. So definitely you need to be getting good uninterrupted sleep, but obviously that's not always possible. Enter Beam's Dream Powder. So it is a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa specifically for sleep. And if you know me, it's been a game changer for really my entire family. My husband has it too. He uses it as well. What I don't like about other sleep aids is that often they can make you feel groggy in the morning, not with Beam. So this is something that actually helps you fall asleep, get to sleep, stay asleep, but you actually wake up feeling refreshed the next day, which is really what I'm going for if I'm taking something. Like, I don't want to feel groggy. I don't want to feel slow. Kind of defeats the purpose, if you ask me. So it's available in delicious flavors like chocolate peanut butter, cinnamon cocoa, and sea salt caramel with only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, melatonin, and nano CBD to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. And you can actually get this with or without the CBD if you're not into it. Numbers don't lie. In a clinical study, 93% of participants reported Dream helped them get better sleep. So it's easy to add to your nighttime routine. Heat up a hot mug of either water or your favorite milk product. Froth it in, and not only do you have a sleep aid, you actually have a little treat every night as well. So if you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com and then you use your code /Lauren. Again, that's shopbeam.com/Lauren with the code Lauren for up to 40% off. And a huge thank you to Beam for sponsoring this video. Been a huge fan of them for a while, so really cool that we are working together. Okay, Amala. So Dylan, he's decided that he's going to break into the world of, I guess, pop music. And for people who are not familiar with Dylan's background, Dylan actually has a background in musical theater. So I guess this isn't quite an unthinkable switch, but I mean, I have my own opinion that this is all just kind of for, I guess, the fame. You can see Dylan's TikTok page. This is hard. Okay. Usually when I'm like making a video about Dylan, like I can like have my editor cut out all of the, but okay, we're live. Okay. Be on point, Lauren. Okay. So Dylan, before Dylan became, you know, the face of Days of Girlhood, Dylan had a project where Dylan was trying to talk about animals, talk about like gay culture. None of that stuck. Dylan comes out with this girlhood thing, rockets to fame. People like me were kind of thinking, okay, was this maybe just trying to get attention, seeing whatever stuck? Apparently it was a trans thing, so Dylan is going with it. I don't know. But yeah, now we have this video, Days of Girlhood. And there's like, obviously male legs.
The walk of shame.
Yeah.
Emergency, calling women of all ages, girls like me, gotta learn the basics, fast look, quick change, sip champagne.
Okay, so that's that. Yeah. Chat's not happy. Yeah. So what are your thoughts? Is Dylan the new Ariana Grande? I mean, I personally dislike the song basically on all levels, musically, lyrically, but I want to know your thoughts.
Yeah, I think interestingly enough, Dylan has struck a specific chord here, and it's a song that both the left and the right can agree is awful and really poorly written, maybe for different reasons. A lot of left-leaning people are saying, you know what, I support Dylan and the journey for transness and all of these different things, but this song is just objectively not good. And of course, people on the right and, you know, more rational thinking people when it comes to Dylan's cultural impact are looking at the fact that this is such a blatantly misogynistically written song that sort of paints a caricature of what it means to be a woman.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, obviously Dylan's content, not a fan of it, but when I was listening to the lyrics for the first time, I could not believe just how superficial the emphasis on girlhood is. I mean, we're talking about like material, shopping, meds, walk of shame. It's like, really? This is what you've learned about like being a woman?
Yeah, but it makes total sense because if you are, can I say, a biological male looking at the experience of a woman from the outside, from this sort of you're not in the club perspective, this is probably exactly what you would glean from the culture that you're watching right now in relation to femininity and womanhood. So I actually said that I like this song in that it is so blatantly clear that this was created with a masculine male energy and not the energy of true femininity or girlhood.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not been received well, at least on YouTube. Anytime I talk about Dylan, I always try to preface for people watching that, by the way, Dylan is a TikToker. So I know a lot of people were saying like, oh, this is a flop. It doesn't have that many views. Like most of Dylan's views and followers are on TikTok. So totally different platform, but at least on YouTube, I mean, downvotes, 104,000 downvotes to 10,000 upvotes, comments are turned off. What are leftists say? I actually hadn't heard many left-wing people talking about it. Why don't they like it?
Well, they're saying that this is just an objectively bad song. And I think they are making a movement against TikTokers, just ushering themselves into the music industry, which seems to happen. People will gain millions of followers and then suddenly a song is out. They're defending the messaging behind the song and essentially saying that this is Dylan expressing Dylan's experience and we should respect that and at least give voice to that. But this song is just not good.
No. Okay. Yeah. That's, I mean, yeah, I feel like that is a criticism that should transcend political boundaries, but it's frustrating because I'm someone who like pretty, I'm a girly girl. I'm a girl's girl. Love everything about being, you know, female. But I also notice anytime there is a celebrity who leans into femininity, she's often met with extra criticism from the left. So I can only imagine if Dylan was female, I feel like leftists would actually, yes, have a problem with this. Like the idea of pushing even that airheaded stereotype. That's something that, I mean, like the bimbo aesthetic. I did a video about that a while ago. A lot of feminists are mad about that. That's basically Dylan's entire persona. But for some reason, it's actually okay because Dylan's trans. Like it does not compute.
Right. I guess for them, what comes before the actual messaging or the substance of what somebody's saying is their identity. And you can cancel out criticism that you should very well receive for the things that you're doing by being a member of the marginalized identity. You know, you can't criticize Black people. You can't criticize trans people. They first take a scan of the person to see how oppressed is this individual before I can levy criticism towards them. And Dylan has the oppression points that I think cancel out what is really valid criticism of the things that Dylan's creating.
Yeah. And this is something that, so for people who don't keep up with Lady Gaga, Lady Gaga recently featured Dylan in a post about International Women's Day and basically kind of made the whole thing about trans rights, which is interesting because obviously Lady Gaga, a lot of left-leaning followers, she's been like very vocally pro-LGBT really from the start of her career. I mean, she did like an entire album, Born This Way. So like very, very left-leaning supporters, but I was interested because I noticed even going through the comments, it seemed like a lot of people who are pro-LGBT, who love Lady Gaga, still weren't necessarily happy with the fact that something like International Women's Day now becomes all about trans rights. And when I look at the broader feminist movement, I feel like that's what's happening too. Like basically feminism has been almost entirely at this point co-opted by the trans issue. If I look at like 2016 era feminism, like, you know, talking about the wage gap, not that I support it, but like, this is what the feminists were pushing. Let's talk about the wage gap. Let's talk about abortion. They're still bringing that up, but now we can no longer really say it's a woman's issue because everybody gets pregnant. And it just, now it feels like it's almost trans, like trans women are women. Let's talk about locker room access. And it's like, okay, but what about like concerns for biological women? Because these are not shared interests necessarily.
Oh yeah, 100%. I feel like what they do is they pick a victim for the moment of whatever movement they're running with. And that becomes the direct 100% highlight of every single subject matter that they talk about. And if you're a feminist who's truly looking at the foundation of feminism, which is the fact that men and women are very different, although they deserve to be treated equally, this all sort of flies in the face of that. And if you can allow what are biological men to now identify as women, what is feminism after that? And people are sort of grappling with that question and realizing, can I no longer associate with this movement that I once appreciated and supported? And I think that's what where we're going to see the deviation. It's much like what we did with race. Black people became the victim of the time. And instead of making it sort of an all-encompassing movement for people of color, it was surely focused on Black Lives Matter, Black people this, George Floyd that. And then you have, you know, Asians, Hispanics, Native Americans raising their hands and going, wait a minute, I thought we were all working together towards some sort of collective movement of equality. And again, that split occurs and people start to trail off and recognize that maybe leftism is not what it was made out to be to them, and they're leaving. So I think that's exactly what's going to happen with feminism. Now you see these TERFs, these trans exclusionary radical feminists, which I'm sure you're often referred to as am I. Yeah. We're going to see more of those.
And it's like that. That's how I feel about, you know, watching J.K. Rowling's journey kind of unfold, because J.K. Rowling, she is progressive. She is a leftist. Like, let's all remember, she's the Dumbledore's actually gay woman. Maybe Hermione really is Black. Like, she is so on board with the progressive agenda. She is a feminist. But at the same time, a lot of progressives hate her now because she believes in biological sex. And she's been smeared as transphobic, which I think is unfair. She has said multiple times, identify however you want. You know, I support you, but it's just when it comes to things like she stood up for, you know, women who have been fired for stating that biological sex is real. She supports women's only spaces. Like, that for some reason is like the thing that's worth canceling people for, even amongst other leftists. This is why leftists are now boycotting like anything new Harry Potter, because it's associated with her. Really quick, super chat from Curtis. Hi, Lauren and Amala. Love both your channels. Modern feminism is anti-female. Thank you so much. And by the way, for people watching, definitely any questions you have for Amala, feel free to send them in. This is live and I am doing my best to keep an eye on the chat. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hopeful that we've almost reached a point in terms of like accelerationism where it's just getting so ridiculous. It's getting so outlandish that people are finally starting to wake up, even if they're still leftists, at least to the dangers of this like wokeism that's being pushed. I mean, I follow a lot of makeup accounts. I've talked about this before. I unfollow brands now that have men in makeup just because it's clearly pandering. I mean, yeah, if a man wears makeup, he's allowed to do that. But let's be real. This is like 0.01% of their customer base. The only reason they have for featuring these men on social media so much with makeup, it's a virtue signal to say that we're on board with the current thing. Like, it's not like there's a huge market of men who are wearing makeup they're hoping to tap into. I look at the comments. There are a lot of women who are saying, okay, I support current thing, but this is kind of ridiculous. Like, can some things just be for women? And it seems like it's almost like a reverse patriarchy where we've once again ended up with men being heralded as the best in whatever, even if it's in the name of feminism.
100%. I'm looking at things like now and saying, what do you mean? No, it's seemingly like nobody does womanhood like a biological man. It's really insane. And I feel like women are realizing, oh, wait a minute. We had a little piece of land. We had a bit of territory, and now that territory is being encroached on, and I no longer feel comfortable with this, even though women are largely responsible for ushering these movements in and allowing them to sort of flourish. But I think they're getting out of hand, and we're realizing that we are maybe overcorrecting for the wrongs of our history, and there's going to be some pushback. I was amazed by the amount of young liberal and left-leaning women that I saw talking about Dylan Mulvaney's video on TikTok and saying, wait a minute, you know, I'm rocking with Dylan, but this song is giving a really wrong message to me. And I don't think I support this anymore.
Right. And I mean, I'm of the opinion, maybe don't interrupt your enemy when they're making mistakes. But I also have people who, anytime I cover Dylan, they'll say, you're the one who's like making this an issue, like blah, blah, blah. I don't think some people understand how big Dylan's influence on something like TikTok is, because they may not be on TikTok. But I said in my video when I covered his song when it was first released, like, if I had the power to catapult anybody like into the millions of followers realm, I would use it for me, not for Dylan. So it's like, let's put things into perspective. Dylan doesn't need right-wing pundits for popularity. The algorithm, the mainstream media, they're happy to give that to Dylan as is. But let's stay on the topic of women, especially young women, a little bit in general. Have you been on the Whatever podcast?
I did go on the Whatever podcast once. Yeah, it was an interesting experience.
How was it? I haven't seen your episode yet, but I'm definitely going to check it out now. What did you think of it? I know I've been on it once. I had never met an actual sex worker before, before appearing on that show. And I know it's been kind of criticized as misogynistic because of the women that Brian, who's the host, chooses to feature. To that, I have to say, well, he's also had, like, he's had you on, he's had me on, he's had Candace Owens on. Like, there is an attempt to try to have, like, both sides of issues. But obviously, there are a lot of, like, OnlyFans girls out there. What would you say to, I guess, the idea that it's actually podcasts like that that are exacerbating gender issues? Because I kind of see it as just like a symptom of the problem. Like, it's, Brian is not creating this hookup culture just by shining a light on it.
Yeah. I mean, the first time that I went on, or the one time that I went on Whatever podcast, it was sort of at the beginning where he was starting, I think, to recognize that it would be great to have opposing people on there and to go head to head with each other. I didn't really have any sex workers on the panel that I was on. So it was really probably a pretty lackluster episode.
Oh, vanilla.
You know, I think what he's done is he's found something similar to what Fresh and Fit and maybe the Andrew Tates of the world found. They recognize what is a pretty big societal issue, and they've decided to put a microscope on it and give that to an audience. I don't know that it's particularly impactful as far as changing people's minds and leading people to the right direction. I feel like it's more of an entertainment type of podcast where people get to watch conflict play out, and he just managed to hack that, much like the Fresh and Fits of the world have.
Yeah, and I feel like so Fresh and Fit, they're the ones in Miami, right? Because there's also Abba and Preach, who I think are Canadian, in Montreal. Them. I'm trying to familiarize myself with some of these people because it's not necessarily content that I, you know, I'm drawn to, but I feel like in a lot of ways, this whole red pill thing, it's becoming like the next thing online, like online culture, I find, is very cyclical. You know, before 2016 and like 2014, I feel like atheism was like the big thing. This is probably before your time, but online atheism was like huge. Then it kind of became like SJW, like feminism stuff. Now I almost feel like we're moving past that, and it's all of this like red pill culture stuff. But, and I, you know, I feel like I'm very much like an outsider looking in on that. But what worries me isn't necessarily that, you know, these women who are sex workers, very promiscuous, or even the men themselves. Like, I think Fresh and Fit and Abba and Preach, like, these are men who don't just critique hookup culture, but they engage in it. Like, they're not presenting, like, it may not be pro-feminism, but it's certainly not pro-conservative or like pro-Christian, pro-traditionalism or anything like that.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, these men
people in the chat are saying Abba and Preach aren't red pill. I apologize if that was a mischaracterization. In my mind, like, I see them in the same vein, but maybe I'm mistaken for that. So apologies.
Yeah, to be fair, I've never seen their content specifically. But yeah, as far as the Fresh and Fits and the Whatever podcast, there does seem to be a contribution to the problem that you are critiquing. If you are then advocating that men should be on these sugar baby websites and sleep with as many women as possible and collect a ton of partners, what women do you think are the ones who are going to be engaging in the sort of activity that you now critique on your podcast? But I could see it as a sort of never-ending supply of both monetary and entertainment value if you're feeding this issue that you then get to highlight on a podcast that you create. So I think there's plenty of due criticism for the message that they package for young men, because they claim that it's a healthy one that's going to lead them down a better path. I don't know that that's true. And it's certainly not healthy for the women who are going to be engaging in this activity. It kind of feels more like a humiliation ritual for the people who are on the podcast rather than an actual effort to bring about societal change.
Yeah. And I feel like the idea of you're criticizing these women 304s, but at the same time you're feeding into it, it almost sets the idea that, yeah, there are some women who just inherently exist and are around to be used. And because there's also this story, I mean, I almost don't want to promote this because I'm not sure where, like, where we're at with what she's done with her OnlyFans, but there is that woman who's gone viral for, I think she previously was on the whatever podcast, but since has at least claimed come out as a Christian. And, you know, that's kind of sparked a whole debate. Obviously, I'm a Christian. I think that I am in need of Christ's forgiveness and grace as anybody. But there are people who are saying, well, no, like you're still. And obviously, men watching this, you do not have to date anybody. You do not want to. Just because a woman is a Christian does not mean you have to overlook things. Like, I'm not saying anyone needs to date anybody. But just in terms of like, how we treat this woman, there are a lot of people who are saying like, well, no, she's done this. She's still trash. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm trying to find, do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, got the I know red exactly hair. Who you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know what her name is, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Right. And I just feel like, again, I don't know the sincerity of this woman, but I feel like if someone is at least saying that they're leaving that life, they're going to change a different path, but still we condemn them, then what is the point? Like, are there just going to be people in the society who are just like inherently, you've done this, now you're untouchable, we will never, like, never forgive, never move on? Again, not saying you have to date her, but just we will always treat you as this pariah, which is, I feel like, the mentality that Fresh and Fit feed into if they're simultaneously saying these women are terrible, but also I'm creating more of them.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. And I'm coming at it from the perspective of being a non-believer. I'm non-religious. So I'm watching these things sort of play out. I think the OnlyFans to, you know, born again version or born again Christian pipeline is going to be a really big thing over the next few years or decades, because that would be the natural progression if you've led a lifestyle like that and then are looking to reconcile it or looking for some sort of forgiveness. I imagine many of them will turn to religion or sort of denounce the lifestyle that they led before. And that's exactly what you should want. If anything is going to change the minds of young women who are on the precipice of entering what is a really harmful industry, it's going to be the women who already did that, who already, right, you know, had that lifestyle, made a bunch of money. I believe she was within the top 1% of earners on OnlyFans. And she's turning back and saying, you know what? It's not the lifestyle for me. Here are the harmful things that this inflicted upon my life and upon the culture. That's what's going to be what stops, you know, a new 18-year-old girl from hopping on OnlyFans, not some guy who is calling her a 304 and saying that she's going to be used up. In fact, I often think shame and ridicule leads people down the opposite pathway that you're asking them to take.
Right. And for people who I see in the chat, there's discussion whether she, so this is the woman, Nala. She, like you said, very popular on OnlyFans. I think she's been on the whatever podcast. She made a video saying that she has actually found Christ. She's turning away from this. She's born again. There's been debate over whether she actually shut down her OnlyFans. At least these posts that I'm seeing, it says the content on there has been deleted. This person says walking away from sin takes time, especially when it's your job. Getting out of sex work, what is notoriously difficult. Can everyone stop viciously judging, questioning her salvation now? So we pray for her and root for her. God is able. And like, you know, aside from the Christian perspective, I just want to say that I do firmly believe, like, I mean, we were saying in the intro, people can change. And you know, I feel like there must be a sort of middle ground where we deeply condemn the OnlyFans, the sex work, you know, this lifestyle, while at the same time recognizing you, just because you're in it now doesn't mean you always have to be. And like, it's not too late to turn around and to change. And I just feel like there's, I don't know, we're kind of, I think it's hard for people right now to do that. And, but you also don't want to enable grifters or whatever it is, but I'm just, you know, looking at how many women are on OnlyFans or they're doing this. And I don't want those women to still be on OnlyFans in 10 years. And I just feel like if we're not simultaneously offering, hey, this is how you leave it, this is how you move forward, then it's like, okay, well, they're not going to change.
100%. I mean, it's the same argument we make for cancel culture. With cancel culture, what people are saying is you are held to the standard of what you said when you were 13 years old. And we're going to judge that through the modern lens. And you are frozen in time as that person. You have not progressed. You have not changed. And we have to hold you accountable for some sort of past self, that you inflicted on the world. If we use that same logic, that's what we're doing to these OnlyFans girls who decide to change their minds and delete their content. You have to offer an off-ramp to people. Otherwise, right, they're only incentivized to continue doing what they're doing and recruit other people, because misery loves company, and you're just going to create an endless cycle of this sort of behavior.
Mm-hmm. And psychological Eugene Fitzherbert says, doesn't mean she's entitled to a man after that. 100%. No one's entitled to anybody to date them. I am not saying any man watching this, you need to go wife Nala up and not care about her past. That's not what I think. But Woke Quill says, no one takes the addict serious on day one of recovery. She's going to have to show people the change that's reality, sadly. And you know, that I think is fair. Like the best predictor for future behavior is relevant past behavior. Right now, Nala's relevant past behavior is being on OnlyFans. But you know what? In a year, in 2 years, 3 years, more and more, her relevant past behavior will be hopefully a new person, a person who turns away from OnlyFans and is speaking out about it. I mean, it's almost like, then what are we doing this for? If anyone who's engaged in these behaviors is just irredeemable, then why, like, are we only trying to aim at the people who've not done it yet and just screw everyone who's like, you're already lost? It's very black pill, I suppose.
100%. And yeah, I think in looking at her story, what actually got her to stop OnlyFans was a man that she is now in a relationship with. So nobody has to worry about having to date this young woman. She's found somebody, and I think she's going to be fine.
Yeah. Another super chat from Spaceman Chris. Thank you so much. Hey, ladies, looking great. Lauren, just dropping by to say this. Tucker has been watching your content since the Roaming Millennial days. Keep up the great work, both you and Amala. Catch the stream later. I mean, I hope that's true. Okay, so random story. I love Tucker Carlson. He's one of my favorite commentators. And I was sick at America Fest this past Christmas. Me and my daughter were sick. So we went there, but then I ended up having to cancel like basically everything that I was going to do. But like that morning, Tim Pool asked like, hey, like, are you around? And I just texted him like, yeah, but I'm like feeling kind of under the weather. It turns out that Tim was reaching out because he wanted me to be on a panel with Tucker that night. And it's like, wow. Tim, I would have taken Tylenol. I would have like pulled it together. But then I wouldn't want to have gotten, I guess, Tim or Tucker sick. So.
Yeah, 100%. Missed opportunity, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm kicking myself. Like, man, if there's an argument for wearing masks, it's that maybe you won't get sick when there's an opportunity to wear Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So something else that I love about your channel is that you talk a lot about pop culture issues. People who are familiar with me know that I have an entire other channel dedicated to that. And I think it's so important talking about like entertainment media and stuff specifically, because I think like if we look over the past generation, why are young people all of a sudden so left? Why is Hollywood so woke now? Well, it's because activists have kind of been inserting themselves. And for a long time, we haven't been paying attention, at least people on the right. And so that's why I love the focus you give to it. Let's talk about The Acolyte a little bit. So for people who are not familiar with The Acolyte, it is an upcoming Disney Plus Star Wars series. Star Wars, since they were bought by Disney while Lucasfilm was, it's been kind of notoriously woke. You know, there's been a big emphasis on creating new female diverse characters, kind of setting the older characters aside. And The Acolyte is interesting because it's a series that really exists entirely outside of anything that's come before it in terms of Star Wars canon. This is set, I think, 100 years before the original trilogy. So it's really just like, this is Disney's Star Wars in its purest form, with absolutely like, they've been given carte blanche to make the Star Wars universe whatever they want in this sense, because again, like, it's not like they have to worry about like, how will we write Luke and Leia, these two characters who already exist. Let's take a look at this trailer. I want to hear what you think about it, and people in the chat, I want to hear your thoughts too.
Close your eyes. Your eyes can deceive you. We must not trust them. Tell me what comes into your mind.
Life. Balance. I see fire.
Gotta watch out for that kid.
Someone is killing Jedi. It doesn't make sense. What happened?
I sensed the darkness.
This isn't about good or bad. This is about power and who is allowed to use it.
What is that?
Yeah, there you go. Acolyte.
Wow.
So I don't know. It just doesn't feel like Star Wars at all to me. It's been described, the series, as going to be like a thriller mystery. So already kind of like, I don't actually have a problem with that in and of itself, but I don't know. I just feel like this is an example of Hollywood not being able to create anything. It can only destroy.
Yeah, I am not a huge Star Wars person, but I sort of watch this stuff from the outskirts to see if there's any red flags that pop up. Of course, they're hitting their diversity quota with this movie, which can be done well. I mean, I just watched Dune 2. I feel like the movie had a ton of diversity in it, and it was sort of just a moot point. It wasn't something that needed to be emphasized. What's more concerning about this Star Wars stuff is what people are saying in the background. The showrunner is talking about the fact that this is going to be a queer film, and that's the foundation from which she's working on this film. Amandla Stenberg, who is the biracial girl featured in the trailer, she's known for her huge activist talking about cultural appropriation and blackness and queerness. So I can only imagine there's going to be sort of sprinkles and notes of that throughout this series.
And that's something that I think is the main issue, rather than just, oh, there's diversity. Because I mean, People say anytime there's like criticism of a show like Acolyte, there are going to be its defenders saying like, well, people are just racist. They hate diversity. Fast and the Furious, one of the biggest franchises on the planet, extremely profitable, extremely loved worldwide, very diverse if you think about it. Like there are characters from everywhere. It's never slammed as woke. Everyone seems to like it. The issue is not just people looking different. It's the messaging that goes along with it. Another example is The Expanse. That is a show that really went downhill quickly, but it's just another sci-fi show where you have people who look all different types of ways, but that's not what the show is about. Like there's a difference between having diverse cast and also let's talk about queer theory or like power balances or whatever it is. Like then that becomes a problem. And I don't know, I'm just looking at this trailer and I'm wondering, like, is anybody actually interested in this? Like, do the people behind the show actually care about Star Wars, or are they just looking to tell their own story? And they know that the best way to get attention and a budget is to like cloak it in Star Wars, like a skin suit. So people at least are familiar with the IP.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like that's what they're doing with everything these days. Every time I see a bit of IP that I feel nostalgia for or love for from an earlier time in my life that's being remade, I just think to myself, I know this is going to be just an agenda-based creation. And I think what these showrunners and writers are doing is they're starting off writing the story from the message that they want to promote to the audience. And it's never a message that is tied to deeper human truths or something about the human condition or adversity or friendship or love. It's, I want to tell a story about queerness or blackness or, you know, insert woke ideology here. And they create this massive project that tells that story throughout the through line. And then they just sort of wrap it in Star Wars or Marvels or Snow White. It's an afterthought, the actual original IP. And what's at the forefront and the foundation of what they're doing is the ideological message that they want to promote to their audience. And essentially, they are stealing your time and money. I mean, like, we work hard and then spend money to go to the movie theater to have a little bit of escapism and entertainment. And they're saying, no, we want to rob you of that and input a modern message into something that you feel nostalgia for.
And it's just, to me, you're so shooting your project in the foot, creatively speaking, because like if we look at what timeless, you know, films or series are, like the original Star Wars, there are themes, absolutely, but they speak to like deeper human experiences. That's why like 40 years later, whatever, people are still interested in Star Wars. If you make your show or your movie about like the politics of the day, like these like little social issues that are really only politics of the day in specific like metropolitan cities and Western countries, like you are automatically dating and alienating so many people. Like, are these issues that are going to be relevant in like 10 years? And I even said that when, you know, in 2016, a lot of people were writing like kind of like Trump characters or Trump-ish characters into their shows. And it's like now, okay, now we're 2024. Are those references even going to be understandable? Is it even going to be like, is it even going to resonate? Because you were choosing the most topical, most superficial thing, and now your story sucks as a result of it. And it's just, it's going to live on like that.
100%. I sit here and watch movies these days or TV shows, and I'm thinking, what is the timeless classic of the 2020s? Like, what is going to withstand the test of time here? And I don't feel like any of them are. I feel like decades from now, we can sort of quiz ourselves by watching the movies and TV shows that are made today and guessing exactly what year, what month they were made, because they follow a very clear trajectory of just taking the movement or the ism of the month that it was created and just throwing it into the film and then giving it out to the audience. I don't know that any of these are going to withstand the test of time. And in fact, what we're going to be doing is looking at these remakes and just tracking back to the originals that were made decades prior and just going back to those. I don't know that we'll have a stamp of a timeless classic out of this day and age.
And that's so sad, because I love cinema. I love TV shows. I want there to be good content. I know anytime I review stuff, I get people like, oh, like you just hate everything. Like I don't want to. It's like, I would so rather enjoy a movie, like not spend 2 hours watching something that I don't like, but that's just kind of where we're at. Are there any shows or films you've seen recently where you actually are like, oh, okay, this is good. This is not just propaganda. It's entertaining.
Man, I did enjoy Dune too. I don't know if you've seen that. I thought that was a pretty good film. And, you know, I didn't see anything particularly concerning with that film. Honestly, I've been going back and watching like old school stuff that I love. I've been watching Desperate Housewives.
Oh my gosh, I love that show. That was like such a pleasure.
Yeah, and you watch it and you're like, oh, so much of this stuff just could not be said today or made today, or so many would be offended by it. But that's why I'm watching it right now.
That's great. And I did like Dune too. So I have you read the books?
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't either. And as my husband loves to remind me, he actually has. So I know there are some people who were like upset about like the characterization of Chani, Zendaya's character. But I mean, again, as someone who at least didn't read the books, I thought it was overall pretty good. And I'm trying to think of series that are like current that are you know, free of anything political. I'm enjoying Only Murders in the Building, but even then, like, that is a pretty woke show. Like, I still like it enough to keep watching it, but absolutely the modern influence is there, unfortunately.
100%. I love that show too, but you can still, it's almost like you have to suspend that little stab in the back each time it happens to enjoy it. But at least with that show, it's tolerable. You can like note it and then keep watching.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Have you, switching gears a little bit, well, I mean, kind of speaking about things that are unpleasant to watch, have you seen Elon Musk's interview with Don Lemon yet?
I've seen the clips that have been circulating, and it made me so uncomfortable that I did not want to watch.
Okay, well, I want to talk to you more about that. But first, I do want to let you guys all know that there is a new Blaze original out. So if you guys are familiar with Blaze originals, they're projects where Blaze actually sends their hosts, me included, people like Glenn Beck to basically the front lines of where breaking news stories are happening, but that the media isn't covering for whatever reason. The latest Blaze original is out here. We've got the trailer. It's starring Jason Buttrell. Really exciting stuff. Wanted to let you guys know about it. So he and the team actually have gone down to the border to investigate the clash that's happening with the Texas border standoff. So they're going there. They went there to uncover what was really happening during Governor Greg Abbott's fight against federal agents. Our team reveals the story the mainstream media doesn't want you to know. So this is the third installment in the series of mini docs, Blaze Originals. You can watch it right now by going to therealbordercrisis.com and using the code border to get $30 off your Blaze TV Plus subscription. You can also watch the documentary, The Blaze Original, that I did on Maui, and I think Glenn Beck's on Eagle Pass. So this is actual investigative journalism that Blaze is investing in. And it's super high quality, high production value stuff. It's just a joy to watch and also informative. So again, if you want to support this journalism, go to therealbordercrisis.com and use code border to get $30 off your Blaze TV Plus subscription. Such a cool project. I can't wait to see what other Blaze originals come out. I would love to do another one, but no, this is like hard hitting stuff. So huge props to Jason and the entire team involved. But all right. Right, now let's talk. The reason why I want to talk about Don Lemon is that he interviewed Elon Musk, and very infamously, as soon as that interview was over, he kind of got canned. Now, one of the things that Elon was pressed on from Don Lemon is the idea of DEI. Don Lemon was very confused and almost offended by the idea that someone like Elon Musk could not appreciate DEI initiatives, because potentially it could lower quality, lower the standards in airline staff or in doctors, whatever it may be. What's your take on that? Is Elon just having like white privilege? Is there an actual avenue where we can discuss the potential dangers of DEI, or is it just we're so set on that path we can't even talk about it because it's taboo?
Yeah, it's insane. We can and should talk about the dangers of DEI, and we're watching now as corporations, institutions, media waste their time on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think everybody needs to be reminded that the time and resources spent on diversity, equity, and inclusion are time and resources that could be spent on the quality of whatever these institutions and companies are working on. Yeah, that's your products. That's your planes. That's your education. That's your Hollywood entertainment. And they're taking all of that time and resources and dedicating it towards DEI to no actual positive outcome, right? This is leading to more division. It is fueling the flames of racial divides, gender divides, sexuality divides here in this country. And it's not bringing us anything positive. So every single moment spent on diversity, equity, and inclusion is to your loss and the loss of everybody around you.
That's something that I've brought up previously when I've criticized, I guess even in the military, the idea that they have pronoun training. Like, there are only so many hours in a day. So if you're spending time and resources on all of this stuff, yes, absolutely, it's affecting your overall quality, because you could have been spending that resource somewhere else. I mean, Florida, very famously, they've now kind of said like, all right, no public funding for DEI stuff. I forget which specific university in Florida it was, but they had to make a statement saying, okay, we're shutting down this entire department and reallocating resources, which is like, yes, good, because any focus on DEI or like this wokeness, it is a resource suck, whether that's time, whether that's money, it doesn't matter. There's this one clip that's gone pretty viral. I mean, a lot of the interview has gone viral, but Don Lemon, basically, he is of the opinion that racism is not just kind of like something that people can experience, which like obviously individuals experience racism, but he's of the opinion that it's like it's institutional. So there's this really interesting exchange that he and Elon Musk have about that, where Elon kind of, I think, tries to put in perspective this racism issue.
We should not make this a constant subject. I think we need to move on. I think we should just, treat people like people.
You don't agree that this country was founded on racism and founded on slavery and in many ways inequities that still continue on to this
day? I think every country at that time, and I think even today, was extremely racist. Every country. Obviously, slavery was present in about half this country. and no, but not was not present in the North. There was racism for sure, but you know, the I think we want to look to the future rather than the past, and instead of engaging in constant rehashing of the past. Because in fact, if you look at history, if you study history broadly, everyone was a slave. Everyone.
Yes. Well, not everyone was a slave.
No, everyone was a slave.
Okay, but
we are all descended from slaves.
Yeah.
Well, all of us.
Yeah.
It's just a question of when. Was it more recent or less recent? That's it.
Right.
But what future do we want? Is this something we want to make part about constant dialogue forever, or do we want to say, like, let's just move on and treat everyone, according to just who they are as an individual?
I agree with you with that. That's the ideal. But what the evidence shows is that that's not what's actually in practice.
So you said the interview was uncomfortable. I would think an apt description. Don Lemon just comes across as so unlikable.
Oh yeah, he thinks he just knows better than everybody who he's talking to. And interestingly enough, that he would come into this interview with somebody who is hiring him and bring this sort of energy. I think he really thought he was going to get into this interview, school Elon, and then have this giant writer for everything that he wanted from X with his contract, and then continue to find success on the platform. And that just did not end up happening. I think Elon saw the signs in this interview that maybe this is not a man you want to be associated with on a contractual obligation.
Well, Charles Disher, Lauren, apparently Don back with CNN. Now, I saw that he had gone to CNN to speak about the interview with Elon. I don't know if he's back with them like as a show host. I think that would be a different story. Yeah. So I haven't heard that, but maybe correct me if I'm wrong, chat. But it was just, he clearly has so much, that's what struck me, is that I think Elon is a very egalitarian person, but when it comes to the issue of race, Don Lemon has a lot of resentment. Not just, I guess, like from individual experiences, but like for the system as a whole. How do we move past that? Because I think when we talk about something like DEI, there are a lot of people like Don Lemon who honestly, they feel personally slighted. They feel like there needs to be compensation. How do we approach that? Because you can't, you know, if someone says they've been screwed over, they're not going to be happy in the system. Even if we say like, hey, no more DEI. Now we just have a bunch of people who have a chip on their shoulder. Like that's also not an ideal place to be.
Honestly, I think it's an issue that we're going to have to continue to contend with for probably decades to come. And it's because of the narrative that is being ushered into our schools and our institutions of education, because people are being sold this as if it's 100% objectively true that you are entitled to some form of compensation or some form of apology from the government, from white people, from all these different entities. And until we stop, you know, promoting that narrative, that's what's going to be what we have to deal with from people who are like Don Lemon, who have attached themselves to this victimhood mentality. I guess I just say that we have to continue calling them out. We have to continue to share the truth like Elon is doing, and to sort of stand 10 toes down on the fact that, you know, everybody has that background. And if we're going to make these calls for retribution and reparations and apologies, then I guess everybody is owed that. And if everybody is owed that, then it really doesn't mean much, does it? We have to continue to call out these claims and just go back and forth with people who have somewhat insufferable ideas about their own victimhood status.
Do you think there's one way that's more, I guess, effective to do that? You know, because Elon's approach is, well, we've all kind of been slaves before, which I've not really seen change anybody's minds. He's not necessarily wrong, but like if we're talking, I mean, it, like to play devil's advocate, like if we're talking about like America's founding specifically, not every, you know, it was a different situation with Black people specifically. Is there a way like that you have found that people connect to the most, where you could actually have like an honest discussion about this? Because I mean, I feel like when we're talking about it's almost, I almost feel like if someone is not at a position because they've rationally come to it, it's hard to rationalize them out of it, if that makes sense. Like if your position is not based on facts, I don't think it's something necessarily that facts can change. Not to say that your opinion can't be changed, but I don't always know if the facts and logic, you know, Ben Shapiro, like on the libs debate style, like I honestly don't think that's effective for everybody or for all topics.
Yeah, it's really tough for me waking up and realizing, oh, maybe I need to get a different perspective on this. I really had to go through it personally and experience it and dive deep into what I truly believed and be around people who believed that for a really long time before I had my wake-up call. And I think very similarly, a lot of people are going to have to go through that. The best thing that I can say is the people who changed my mind were not those who were constantly attacking me, calling me brainwashed, indoctrinated, stupid, all these different things that we sort of throw into the conversation sometimes. But people who are saying, I understand why you have the perspective you have with what you're seeing, with the education that you've been given, with your personal feelings towards the transgressions of this nation's history. But can I offer you a separate perspective, or maybe tell you how the very ideology that you're supporting, it's really not bringing about the best outcomes. If we do give the apology and reparations, what do you truly think that fixes? And let's talk about how maybe these are not the solutions to the problems you're facing right now. And you can't anticipate changing anybody's mind with a singular conversation or even over multiple conversations. It's really a waiting game, and people have to go through their own personal experiences.
Right. And I feel like that's a good, I guess, a good mindset to come from, like the idea that at the very least I can offer a different perspective for you, even if it doesn't change your mind. I think it's still a win if someone understands where you're coming from a little bit better. But something else about this interview that I thought was just what the heck is that Don Lemon also comes off as like actively pro-censorship. I think he calls it stewardship. Like he just wants moderation, but that's basically code for censorship. We have this clip that Jimmy Dore, and he's a leftist, but I really appreciate how he has been anti-censorship on this.
I don't think people should care what the media thinks about them. They're terrible judges of character.
Even someone who has one of the biggest social media and biggest information platforms in the world, you don't think that you have any x.com or you have any responsibility to the truth or moderating the platform?
So you're conflating the truth with the media, and I think the media is not truthful.
Well, not just the media. I mean, just the truth in general.
I care about the truth very much. That's why we have, for example, community notes on the X system, where in order for community note to surface and provide corrective information about what somebody posts, and my posts are equally subject to this. My I've been in a community noted many times. In order for a community note to surface, people who have historically disagreed must agree in order for a community note to surface. And all of the code for community notes is open source. All of the data is open source.
So obviously, Elon's kind of pro community notes, but Don Lemon, he says that X has become a hotbed of anti-Semitism since you took over. And, you know, he very much is trying to weave the idea that by not having more what he calls content moderation, Elon is personally enabling potentially violence in the future if people are inspired by these posts. This is the same kind of rhetoric we see when people talk about like YouTube videos being subject to moderation, Facebook posts. What do we do about this? Because I mean, you're an online content creator. This literally, they might be talking about views, moderating views that you have videos on. So what's the way forward? Because this is probably one of my most frustrating issues, because it's one that, I mean, and not only it affects like the online sphere where I spend a lot of time, but I feel like the overall flow of communication, which yes, does have electoral consequences.
Yeah, it's kind of an up in the air thing to think that our channels and everything we do could just be taken off the internet at any given moment. But I mean, I'm going to continue to say what I'm going to say and what I think, because that's the way that life has historically been. And now we're going through this weird time where we feel like we can police everything that people think and feel and write and say. And it's ridiculous. I find that sometimes I'll sort of tailor the content I make to be able to skirt the regulations, but also provide the same message that I've always been providing. But when you have a platform like X, Elon Musk is very much doing the right thing. If we were having a conversation out in public, it doesn't matter if I say something hateful. It doesn't matter if I say something you don't like. That's the way that conversation goes. And we should be able to challenge each other's beliefs and ideas. What's interesting about the way that Don Lemon thinks is that he feels as though people who have bad ideas, according to him, should be silenced. The best thing you can do for somebody with bad ideas is allow them to say them out loud, especially in a room of other people who can challenge that person and go toe-to-toe with them. And that's exactly what X is as a platform. So to not encourage that is just dumbfounding to me. But what he really wants is an echo chamber.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Like the idea that it is even Elon Musk's responsibility in the first place, I feel like that's something that wasn't brought up 10 years ago when YouTube was the Wild West, where you could have Alex Jones trending coming up first in search results if you typed in something about Trump. Like that idea, it sounds crazy nowadays, but that used to be the norm on social media before the narrative of, oh, content moderation, we can't enable hate. Like they've done a really good job kind of astroturfing this issue where now it's almost unthinkable. Now it's the fringe position to say, hang on, your YouTube, your Facebook, your X, just like if it's illegal, yeah, or copyright, but otherwise it's not your position to be a content curator and feed people content you think they should be watching. And it's just crazy to me how quickly they've managed to change the conversation surrounding that. And it's really worrying because yes, things on X are pretty good now. I think since Elon stepped down as CEO and appointed that other woman, there's been a bit of a backslide. We've had, you know, that whole like pronoun den naming issue, but overall it's still leagues better than something like YouTube, something like Facebook. How do you feel about Don Lemon being in the media and advocating for this? Because it's almost like, I think it's just a huge red flag that he's not just like a journalist, but he actually is an activist, because you would think that journalists would be in favor of more speech and free speech, but it's, you know, CNN, we've seen like Washington Post, New York Times. It seems like all of the established media is in agreement that actually free speech is bad.
Yeah, it's deeply concerning to see that happen. I feel like I don't know where journalistic integrity went in this country, but it is seemingly gone. The purpose of the journalist used to be to look at, you know, the current narrative or perspective that's being shared, to try and catch it from all angles and see if there was any, you know, information missing or ideas that needed to be challenged, and putting out pieces about things like that. And now it seems to be we toe the line of what we are told to say, what the general narrative is, and we do that as this sort of collective echo chamber where all of these different major corporations are working in tandem to hand you the same messaging and the same news, and they don't want anybody else to be able to give you a different perspective. I lean heavily on like independent journalism now, people who are posting on things like TikTok and Twitter and YouTube and giving their perspective, or, you know, giving a different angle from the stories that we're seeing on mainstream media. Because honestly, if that's your philosophy towards news, media, and information, you're probably not trustworthy, you know, whatsoever, especially if you feel the need to inject your own personal beliefs and your own personal prescription for society into the work you're doing as a news outlet.
And so how do you, because I have, you know, people, I have a TikTok account. I don't really post there. Try to post more just because I would like to be everywhere. But, you know, I have people say, how could you be on X platform? You're just supporting them. You know, whether that's YouTube, whether that's TikTok, how do you deal with that kind of struggle? Because I don't like TikTok. I certainly don't like YouTube. But at the same time, I feel like removing myself from the conversation on that platform is what the censors want. And I don't want to give into that. Is that kind of your philosophy?
100%. I mean, look at the amount of people who are using platforms like TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. We're talking millions, billions of people, essentially. And if you remove yourself from what is a culturally iconic platform that is shaping and molding very malleable young minds, you've removed a perspective that they could have been privy to from the conversation. And that culture continues with or without you. So would you rather be a healthier part of the cycle that some people could be exposed to? Or would you rather create your own little piece of land that everybody who thinks like you lives on, where we're all on the same platform, just echoing over to one another the same exact beliefs that we've always shared? It makes sense to be where the culture is shifting and changing and where people are learning and finding their information. And that happens to be TikTok and Instagram and YouTube. And of course, you take a hit in participating in what is probably not the best platform for the conversation. But nonetheless, I mean, people are going to be there getting information.
Yeah. And I just feel like, I mean, my mentality is also like, there are people who don't want me on there. So just despite them, I should definitely be on there, if nothing else. But it's especially important for Gen Z. TikTok, I think, recently surpassed at one point Google for most active users, most amounts of hits, which is absolutely insane. And, you know, the stats for where different generations are in terms of their social media usage, it's very, very segregated. Facebook is very popular with older people, which makes sense because it was kind of one of the first millennials. So people who are my age, we like Instagram a lot, and X, which is like, that's where I live. So that's accurate. But Gen Z, very, very much on TikTok. And so, you know, I see the conservative movement, right-wing movement, a lot of the things that they do, unfortunately, I think they're almost like making it so easy for the left to just take Gen Z, whether that's saying we're not going to be on TikTok, you know, we're not going to like talk about video games because like we're anti them. And it's just like, okay, but like, could you guys imagine being accessible or like likable for once in terms of like a young person's view? Like, wouldn't that be novel? What do you think are the things that we should be doing to reach Gen Z that we're not?
Talking about the culture, being invested in the culture. Not only do I talk about and critique the culture, but I do love a lot of the stuff that comes out today that other young people love. And I think there's a caricature painted of conservatives of like the old white man who doesn't care about us and thinks we should pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and doesn't care about the things we love or have any understanding of the things we love. And that can be sort of largely true if you're like looking at the government and if you're looking at that as a reflection of the people around you. But there's very much a large conservatively thinking or rationally thinking base that is very much interested in culture and media and entertainment. And I would say go where that is. And even if you don't like it, use it as a platform to critique and show people a different perspective on some of the things that they're getting on a daily basis. It's a really amazing launch pad to start what are very critical conversations that young people are thinking about. They just might not feel comfortable or safe enough to have the conversation given the nature of the climate. So you kind of have to be the one to rip the Band-Aid off and say, you know what, I'm seeing Dylan Mulvaney's new music video right now, and here is why this is misogynistic or why this flies in the face of old school feminism and the idea that we have female spaces and female rights. And all of a sudden, you have all these Gen Z, Gen Alpha people who are aware of what's happening culturally, but never got this sort of newer, fresher perspective on why they should be critical of it. It's an amazing place to be to grasp new eyes and share some new ideas.
And I mean, I completely 100% agree. The culture is so important. So someone, I just missed it, says that Gen Z is largely lost. I don't know if you saw that the survey that was going on around that actually Gen Z men are surprisingly conservative. But here we go. Kevin C, Gen Z is lost. Gen Z men are actually quite conservative. It's Gen Z women who I think are more liberal than ever, which is almost like, I feel like that's such a perfect representative a representation of how I see Gen Z. I see them as very polarized, very divided. You know, Gen Z right wingers are more right wing than like millennial or boomer conservatives by a mile. Same with Gen Z progressives. They're even more progressive than the progressives that we see with people like AOC. So it's just kind of like they've really kind of, I think, become almost a representation of politics at large. But yeah, when it comes to issues that are related to public policy, I also feel like the right is really bad with messaging, because there have been several TikTok videos of even, you know, young people complaining about things like housing is so expensive, I can't afford anything, inflation is so high, I can't get a job. And instead of using that opportunity to say, yes, exactly, these are the policies that the left, you know, that they're trying to bring in, here's why like this bill or whatever is bad and is affecting you in the way it is, here's why we can do things better with small government. There is, especially among older conservatives, a tendency to say, you entitled brat, and you mm-hmm. know, this is your fault. Pick yourself up. And like, you know what? For some of them, I understand there are entitled young people of all generations, but yeah, there are some TikToks that I watch where like, all right, you need a reality check, but they're also some where it's like a person crying in their car saying, I'm working four jobs. I can't afford this. I went to school. I have this debt. And for them to be met with just like mockery, it's, well, this is what a lot of young people are thinking. And if we don't have answers for them, then I don't see why we would ever expect them to vote our way.
Oh, 100%. They're so detached from what modern life looks like. And, you know, you hear the joke, my dad had to, you know, climb a mountain in order to get to school every day. And that's sort of the story that he paints for me. Yes, exactly. So you hear all that, and there's sort of this underlying idea that you will never struggle as hard as I struggled. And what that statement shows to young people is that you don't care about the problems of the modern generation. And there very much are problems of the modern generation, the media landscape, social media, the economy, how people are dealing with inflation and AI and all these different things. And there's going to be grievances that young people are going to share out into the void that is the internet. And they're being met with, why are you complaining? You have it so much better than I did. Your life is so cushy. And that failure to recognize that every generation has its problems and we should speak to those grievances is largely what's going to lead them to a side of the aisle that is constantly saying, let us fix that for you. We understand. We understand how oppressed you are. Let me give you free healthcare and free education and this and that. And while those messages are enticing, they're not actually leading to real progress or doing something that's good for this generation. So we really have to work on messaging and acknowledging grievances and hopefully making plans on how to fix them.
Right. I mean, here, Adam Oakler says, can't get a job is the dumbest crap I've ever heard. Research other business is begging for employees. I mean, it's not dumb though. I mean, there are a lot of low level jobs that are opening, but you have recent college grads who are spending months and months looking for jobs in their field, or even just, you know, jobs that might be considered like remotely adjacent. In the meantime, they're working like hourly jobs where the wages are really low because obviously we've been importing a lot of low skilled workers with mass migration. It's like, these are genuine concerns to have. And I just don't know, like, if you're a right winger, I don't know how you can simultaneously say Biden is ruining the economy, like New York and California, the terrible places, the leftist policies are terrible, but also person who is affected by these policies, this is in your mind, you just need to work hard. Like that to me is like my issue. Like, obviously we support policies that Biden doesn't because we think the policies in place are bad for the economy. Why then, when someone comes out and says, I'm suffering from those, you know, I'm suffering the consequences of the bad economy, like we laugh at them, like, ha, no, you're not. And also, I think what a lot of people don't understand is like the ratio of housing to wages has increased dramatically. So, you know, when young people say it's not affordable, they're not making it up. They're not just being entitled. And I feel like that's a generational divide where I see people kind of, dismissing the younger generation. And it's like, it's hard because, like you said, the left is like, they're all there for those problems. They are offering to fix all of them, to give them like free job, you know, whatever it is. And we're not only are we not helping them, we're denying the problem exists. So I don't find that particularly strategic, let's say. Freethinking Dog 09 says, my company just has a DEI town hall. When people said they didn't care and just wanted to work, the alphabet people told us all to reevaluate our lives. I think what a lot of people who are like in that activism mode are offended by is like, it's not enough that they are able to like have this platform, talk about their pursued grievances. They also want you to care. And if you don't care, that apparently is a bad thing. Amala, I've had so much fun today. It's been such a blast talking to you. I'm so happy that you were able to make the time. Where can people keep up with you, follow you, watch your videos, all that good stuff?
Yeah, you can search me on any platform under Amala Ebenobi and you will find me. I know it's a mouthful, but hopefully you can find me. Just type in the name Amala. I'm everywhere. I do a podcast every single day that you guys can watch where we talk about very similar issues. So hopefully you find it.
Definitely. If you guys are subscribers here, you're going to absolutely love Amala's content. It's so much fun. She's definitely one of my faves. I have notifications on for you. And again, thank you so much for everyone watching this, and we will see you again soon. Take care.
Bye, guys.